Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC New York Public Radio, this is The Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is just one segment of our show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open from American Express, presenting the interactive webcast event, Making a Name for Yourself. Kate and Andy Spade and Bobby Brown discuss their leap from business to brand, created by Open from American Express. Registration at openforumonline.com.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and with Hillary Clinton's easy primary victory in the news this morning, we will talk now with the Democrat considered probably the other front runner so far for the Democratic presidential nomination in 2008. He is former Virginia Governor Mark Warner, a Democrat so popular in his Republican-leaning southern state that he left office due to term limits this year with about a 75% approval rating statewide in Virginia. Warner has been critical of his own party for conceding so much of the South and Midwest to President Bush in 2004. Mark Warner is 51 years old. He made a personal fortune in telecommunications. He was co-founder of Nextel. He got the backing of influential liberal blogger Jerome Armstrong of MyDD.com early for the presidential campaign. And Warner was in the news a bit last week for appearing as an avatar, that's an animated version of himself, to answer questions about his views in the virtual online world known as Second Life. Maybe you heard about that. Governor Warner, a great pleasure to have you on WNYC. Hi there.
Brian, thanks for having me on this morning.
Can I start with your animated self answering questions on Second Life? Was that just a lark, or do you think forums like that are important to democracy today?
It was kind of out there, and it was, you know, you're kind of this disembodied figure walking around, but my sense is that particularly younger people are not going to receive most of their political news through the dreaded 30-second TV ads, and that there are a whole series of people who communicate, form new communities in a series of areas using the Internet and technology. I have somebody who spent 20 years in telecom and IT, and as somebody who believes that politics in this country is less about kind of left-right, liberal-conservative, and more future-past, now, I want to try to use all these mediums to see how I can reach people that might not otherwise be involved, get them engaged. Whether the Second Life three-dimensional avatars are going to become the next meetup type of phenomena in 2004, I can't say, but my sense is you got to be willing to try it all.
Who would have thought 20 years ago, right? It's avatars and Colbert, and you take it from there. And I know one of your slogans, in all seriousness, is that we should look at politics in terms of the future versus the past rather than left versus right. But what does that mean in terms of your key positions on issues?
Well, what it means, first of all, is that I don't think most policymakers, regardless of their political party, fundamentally understand the changes that are sweeping through our society, driven by technology, driven by globalization, driven by what we called in the late 90s the new economy, or folks now might call, you know, Tom Friedman's Flat Earth. I think it is this rapid rate of change is what has, to some degree, you know, driven the rise of Islamic fundamentalism. Is in that part of the world, people are afraid of changes. I think you've seen our own country coming out of this administration, a reaction against science when you've got a Bush administration that rejects global warming, stem cell research, tries to politicize the FDA in terms of determining what is a, you know, what's a woman's contraceptive device in terms of Plan B. I think there's policymakers that don't understand the fact that we can't seem to connect the dots between energy policy, global warming, national security, and quite honestly, American job creation. And my sense is if we don't understand these challenges, if we don't fundamentally understand that we're in a growingly interconnected, knowledge-driven world affected by technology, new communities being formed, that some of the kind of most quintessential American values, like everybody in this country ought to get a fair shot, that we're going to be divided into kind of not only economic haves and have-nots, but knowledge-based haves and have-nots, and that's going to widen disparity in this country.
Though you still come down to some old left-right choices, don't you? Does everybody get a fair shot by lowering taxes, or does everybody get a fair shot through government health insurance, or you know what I mean?
Well, I think what everybody gets a fair shot in the sense that in a competitive world, I mean, this is, again, where I would put the failure of this administration to have a national competitiveness strategy. I believe everybody getting, the question of health care is not only a moral issue of, 48, 50 million Americans without health care, but unless we can get our arms around ensuring that every American has health care, no American business is going to be able to compete on the world scene. I mean, I argue health care, education, innovation ought to be part of our competitiveness strategy, not just kind of normally based in the moral arguments of the rightness of health care.
Former Virginia Governor Mark Warner, my guest on WNYC, considered a front runner for the Democratic presidential nomination in 2008. He's actually here doing some events in New York today, fundraising and some other things. And, of course, yesterday was primary day in 9 states plus D.C., and our own Senator Clinton here in New York won big here against anti-war candidate Jonathan Tasini, and people keep saying you and she are the front runners so far for 2008 on the Democratic side. What do you think of the job our junior senator from New York is doing?
I think she's doing a great job. I think Hillary Clinton is one of the strongest voices we have in the United States Senate. I think she's a great Democrat, a great national leader. If she decides to run in 2008, she'll clearly be the early front runner.
On the war in Iraq, you've been quoted saying the Bush administration has been consumed by its all-consuming focus on Iraq rather than protecting the American people. The president says the war is still necessary to protect the American people. You disagree?
I believe that the war in Iraq not only has not provided stability to the people in Iraq, but I think is one of the major reasons that we are losing the hearts and minds of many people in the Islamic world. I believe the threat of the jihadists and the Islamic terrorists is real. I mean, not only was your great city attacked on 9/11, but my state was attacked as well. The Pentagon's in Virginia. I watched it burn from the roof of my campaign headquarters during my campaign. I mean, as governor, dealing with Homeland Security was something I had to deal with each and every day, and oftentimes without assistance from a federal government that seems Department of Homeland Security, in my mind, is kind of an example of what happens when people who deplore government actually try to do massive government reform.
Let me keep you on Iraq
on
for
Iraq,
a minute.
Let's come back to Iraq. And on Iraq, I think we've got to find a way out of Iraq. I think we've got to have a plan. I think getting out without a plan is as bad as going in without a plan. And my belief is getting out of Iraq has to be what I laid out would be three points. One, we've never made clear the people of Iraq, or for that matter, to the people in the Arab world, that we have no permanent intention of staying in Iraq. I think we need to make clear that. We need to start redeploying our troops, and I believe we need to have this Iraqi government call an international conference, particularly engaging all of Iraq's neighbors, including Iran and Syria, in a diplomatic effort, a la Bosnia-type accord, that would say, as we get out, these other neighbors who have as much effect, if not more, than what we are having in Iraq, would help to try to lower the violence.
When you talk about no intention of a permanent presence, are you saying that if you become president someday, that you're making a promise not to keep a permanent U.S. military base of any kind there?
I think that the great feeling amongst that is used against us by the insurgents and throughout the world is that the Iraqi people feel that we are in the process of trying to recolonize or they do view it oftentimes as a kind of the West crusade against the Islamic world. I think we make clear that we have no permanent intentions of bases in Iraq. I think what we also have to recognize is what is the greatest threat to America's interest and the region's interest. And in my mind, that is the rise of Iran. We basically, this administration over the last 5 to 6 years, and I fundamentally reject the notion that Iraq is inexorably tied to the war on terror. If anything, this president is about to leave whoever is the next president, not only with a disaster in Iraq, but potentially with a much strengthened Iran, which is the real deal in terms of jihadist leadership, the potential of WMD, the ability to spread particularly their own version of Shia extremism all throughout the region. And that's come about because this administration's, again, unilateral focus on Iraq has taken the eye off Iran, and unfortunately, as we see in all of the papers in the last few weeks, the eye off Afghanistan as well, where we're seeing a reemergence of the Taliban.
Former Virginia Governor Mark Warner, my guest on WNYC, considered a frontrunner for the Democratic presidential nomination in 2008 on the larger issue of homeland security. President Bush, of course, has framed our response to September 11th as a war on terror. Do you think that's the right framing?
I think the threat of Islamic fundamentalism, Islamic jihadist, is real. And I think we have to protect the American people. But I believe this is a battle that has to be waged on three fronts. It has to be waged potentially militarily in terms of how we seek out, capture, and kill the members of Al-Qaeda and others, the most extreme, who want to attack us. It means how we protect our homeland and our nation. And there, I believe this administration has not done what needs to be done to keep our country safe. Listen, we in Virginia had to put in place an interoperable radio system so our first responders could talk. We had to put in place a fusion center so we could actually share intelligence. We got recognized as one of the best states in terms of biohazard preparation because we've not seen that focus from this administration. 5 years after 9/11, and we still don't screen most air cargo. We screen our person, but we don't screen air cargo going onto our planes or most of the containers that are coming into our ports. We still don't have accurate and appropriate sharing of intelligence. We've not seen, I think, the level of success needed in terms of homeland security.
So that's two of the three, right? Al-Qaeda, homeland.
Beyond military and homeland security, there's also a battle for the hearts and minds of the people in the Islamic world. And there again, we have fallen short because what this president's foreign policy has done, which is fairly unique, he's managed to actually unite our friends or unite our enemies and divide our friends. He has walked away from what has been traditional American foreign policy over the last 50 years into Republicans and Democrats, which is say America has to lead not only militarily, but has to lead with strong economy, strong alliances, and actually having a foreign policy that reflects American values.
So let me push this one step further, and I want to play you a clip of Democratic Congressman Jack Murtha from our show just a few weeks ago on the question of war on terror and whether that's the right framing, and see how much you agree or not. This begins with my question to Murtha. Another email says, the only thing that's working is law enforcement and not a military engagement, not a so-called war on terror. Is that a position the Democrats can win on? 30 seconds.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely right. I think this is a police matter more than anything else, diplomatic and police action. And I agree. We've done everything we can do militarily, and there's a limitation to military power. And so police action and diplomacy is going to be the answer to what's happened in the Middle East.
So diplomatic and police action, says Murtha. Would you use that language? Would you drop war on terror?
I wouldn't drop war on terror, but I believe it needs to be diplomatic, winning the hearts and minds of the people in the Islamic world. It means a strong military presence used appropriately, not used as the first option, but as oftentimes as the last option. And it means much more focus this country on true homeland security, doing the things, for example, that the bipartisan 9/11 Commission recommended that in most cases still haven't been carried out by this administration.
And one more thing on this. In your opinion, did they attack us because they hate freedom, as the president says, or because they have issues with U.S. behavior that could be debated?
Listen, I'm not sure I can crawl into the minds of someone that would be so despicable that they would fly airplanes into the World Trade Center or into the Pentagon or attempt to into the White House. I mean, that is despicable behavior, and I have the same level of anger that I think most Americans feel against these terrorists. I do believe that their motivations are they hate our way of life. I think the president's right there, but I also think they have enormous frustration with some of the governments in the region that have oftentimes not been marching towards any level of freedom for their own people. But regardless of their motivation, I think this is a struggle that we have to wage and win against these terrorists, but I sure as heck don't believe the way this president has handled it is that we have decreased the number of potential terrorists against America, and as what we've seen as well, well, thank God we've not been attacked over the last 5 years, we've seen a whole new brand of terrorists arise through countries like Spain, the UK, Southeast Asia. I unfortunately believe there's a lot more potential terrorists today than there were 5 years ago.
Former Virginia Governor Mark Warner, my guest for another few minutes here on WNYC, widely considered a front runner for the Democratic presidential nomination in 2008. He's in New York today doing some meet and greet and some fundraising. Most people outside Virginia are still very unfamiliar with you. How would you explain your amazing popularity as a Democrat among Virginians who vote Republican for almost everything else?
Well, Brian, it was actually fairly simple. We actually got things done. We actually got results. You know, I spent 20 years in business before I got back into politics, and I started with the premise that, hey, you know, good ideas don't come with a D or an R attached to them. I'll work with anybody if we can get things done. In Virginia, we went from a $6 billion deficit to a $1 billion surplus. We had an honest debate about finances, got named the best-managed state in the country by Governing Magazine. We had some of the biggest increases in the country on our education achievement as we made record investments in education, but we said to the education community, all right, you got to change. You got to be willing to shake things up. We actually started to crack the code. One of my big passions is how do you make sure not everybody in America has to move to a major metropolitan area to find a good job? We started to finally... Our downstate Virginia is somewhat like your upstate New York, communities that have lost a lot of traditional jobs. We actually put in the biggest rural broadband deployment. We brought about started to bring software design jobs back to some of our coal mining communities. And, you know, at the end of the day, after 4 years, and Virginia's the last state in the country with a one-term governor restriction, you know, people will come up to me and say, hey, Governor, we're really proud of our state. We're proud of the progress we're making. And, you know, that sense of pride, again, is what we don't feel at this point in our country. We're all proud to be Americans, but I don't know many Americans, regardless of your partisan affiliation, that can say we're proud of the direction our country's headed. Whoever can talk to the American people and challenge them to say, the problems we face in this country and this world are so great, it's going to take all of us stepping up. It's going to take a little bit of shared sacrifice. Who can tap into that energy in a certain way we tapped into in Virginia that makes people feel that they're actually part of the solution and giving them some hope, I think it's going to not only be the next president of the United States, but it's going to actually start to restore that pride that I think we desperately need to feel.
And so you came out of office this year because of term limits with a 75% approval rating as a Democrat in Republican-leaning Virginia. We have 2 minutes left, Governor. Let me tick off some policy areas for some real short questions and short answers to let our listeners get to know you better on a couple of things. Could you support a single-payer health care system like Congressman John Conyers' Medicare for All?
I would not support a government-run single-payer, but I do believe we need to move to universal coverage. And again, in a state where we signed up 98% of all our kids for children's health insurance, I got some specific ideas on how we get there.
If you were in Congress, would you vote to make President Bush's tax cuts permanent?
No.
I gather you're not the typical Democrat on gun control, but we just got new Justice Department statistics that show gun crime is going up after years of decline, and some say it's because states are backing off gun control. What should be done?
I believe that we ought to enforce our existing gun laws, but as I campaign, I said, you know, you elect me governor, I'm not going to take away your shotgun if you like to hunt. Of course, I've got to make an exemption now for the vice president, but...
hey, that was an accident.
That way, right.
And I understand you're for something called a citizen corps, saying everyone can play a role in Homeland Security by being trained as first responders or finding another way to give back to your country. Do you mean some kind of mandatory national service?
I think we ought to look at some level of national service that can engage Americans in how they get involved, not just around Homeland Security. The biggest missed opportunity this presidency was failing to call on the American people to step up. After 9/11, we all would have done anything the president would ask. He simply asked us to go shopping. He says we're in a war on terror, but the only people who've been asked to make a sacrifice are the families and the men and women of our military. That's not fair or right, and what he didn't tap into was that enormous spirit, and he could have rekindled it again just the other night. But again, we got a political speech instead of any kind of call to arms. Wouldn't have been great if we would have said the other night, hey, we're going to change our policy where we borrow money from China to buy oil from countries around the world that don't like us. We're going to really put out a plan to free ourselves from fossil fuels that might just save the planet along the way. This president has a continuing succession of missed opportunities to draw on that American spirit that we all know we're all going to have to step up if we're going to get this country fixed.
Former Virginia Governor, co-founder of Nextel, Mark Warner, widely considered a front-runner for the presidential nomination of the Democratic Party in 2008. Thanks so much for coming on with us today.
Brian, thanks for having me on.
Coming up in a minute, culture critic Grail Marcus on prophecy and the American character from the Puritans to Pere Ubu. Stay with us. Thanks for listening to The Brian Lehrer Show from WNYC New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.